Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too. Fried fam, today we get to dig into some topics where we are taking no prisoners, we are holding nothing back, and we are calling out the bullshit. Because this is how Jamal and I roll when we are together. Jamal Marshall is a certified counselor and founder of Listen Then Speak LLC, which is also his podcast. He helps clients establish healthy boundaries by dealing with pain points of rejection, trauma, and burnout, which frees them up to reach their full potential. His more than 10 years of experience in dealing with clients has gained him expertise in both childhood trauma, addictions, rejection, perfectionism, and procrastination. My listeners right now are going ding, 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 ding to all those things. He tailors his counseling and coaching to the specific need of the client to assure that problems are being addressed at the root. Clients are able to see a visible progression, which allows them to take steps and calculated risks to open the opportunities for which they are already destined. Jamal, welcome to Fried.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
I'm so excited. The first time we met, it was one of the last, like, oh, you should meet this person networking calls that I took, because I get so many requests for those that I can't actually do my job and do those networking calls at the same time. It's not possible. But the person that recommended us, Kristen Spencer, who's just a fabulous copywriter, I was like, well, I really trust her. And we got on the phone and...
lightning in a bottle.
Right?
But it was like within the first 40 seconds, I was like, oh yeah, we're twins.
Exactly. It was so good. So as per usual, Unfried, I'm going to sit back and let you tell your burnout story. Whatever version is fresh in your mind right now, whatever feels like coming out is fine. And we'll use that as the springboard for the remainder of our conversation. We will follow whichever threads light us up.
Got it. Okay, you and I have spoken offline, but now that this is online, I feel incumbent upon me to tell your audience my story. And I think a lot of times we see most folks within our purview, whether it's corporate or whether it's personal, that are on autopilot. But that autopilot doesn't just happen by happenstance. You know, it very much has a story. It has an origin. And so for me, autopilot started as a little boy who grew up in a very abusive household. I had one parent that was absolutely divine, another mean enough to be Satan himself. And so with dad being at that time, before his life turned around, a raging alcoholic and a drug addict, I found him very unpredictable and also very uncontrollable. And he was both physically and verbally abusive. So not only are you getting the physical abuse, but you also have the verbal things thrown at you, which form narratives in your mind. And so I believe that every other dude had some X factor that I did not. And so it was out of control at home. I said, OK, I cannot control this environment. What can I control? I can control my grades. I can control sports. I can control the way I am around other people. I can try to control some essence of it, the way I am around dad, to just keep from kicking up any dust. It's like, do anything you can to not trouble the waters. And so when that is your narrative as a child, it follows you into every area of your life. So I became the classic chameleon. Jamal was the person of excellence. Jamal was, when my mom went to parent-teacher conferences, oh, you're doing such a wonderful job with your son. I made sure she wasn't going to hear anything other than that. I made sure there was no trouble. There was no, is there something I need to be concerned about? No. But inside, I was dying. You know, I straight A student, except in math. I only got one A in statistics, and I was in my last year of college because I locked myself in a room. Another story, another podcast. me and numbers don't always get along. But in the midst of all those things, I found that in my profession, the way burnout started to manifest itself was I was the first to get to work, last to leave. I was always the one, Jamal, the dependable one. I was always the one who, if there was an extra pager, like I took, you know, I'm dating myself. Yes, I'm an 80s baby, almost 40. I was the one who said, you can page me, you can call me, you know, you can get me to do anything. And I didn't realize that that was childhood and teenage me grasping for affirmation. Yeah. I just wanted someone to say, you've done well. And not that my mom didn't do those things, but it's something about when a dad speaks into his son's life and calls the man out of him. I didn't have that as a little boy. And so I went through most of my professional life, you know, basically searching for that. I started out as an 18-year-old intern at the Department of Justice. And then, you know, I worked really hard. They gave me my own office. I was just always doing everything. I got outstanding on every performance appraisal. And then when I went into counseling myself, because I realized I need help, I was the one, I remember the director of the department said, you know, I noticed something about you, Jamal. You always answer your phone. And I remember thinking, like, I look back and I'm like, that was a compliment from him, but it was a way of me connote and sending out a message that I'm always available. And so basically, I'm saying to your audience, Jamal Marshall was on the clearance rack. Fast forward 7 to 8 years later, I went into anti-human trafficking after leaving when I'd gotten fully certified as a counselor. And my changed many lives, but I also noticed as a counselor in the early days, and I started in 2013, I made myself overly available to my clients. And they, you know, I got them incredible results, but I myself was falling apart. And when I realized, okay, dad was dying. So I'm fast forwarding through a lot of information just in the interest of time. I started to head back home. I resigned from there, took a year off, and then worked in anti-human trafficking and investigations again for a global organization.
Yeah.
Now, if your phone is always on for a global organization, let's just speak some math here. When do you sleep? Because in the Philippines, while we're sleeping, guess what? They're awake. Yeah. In Kampala, Africa, guess what? They're awake. I could name many other places. And so I was working a job before anything was remote. I was, in a sense, already working remote.
Right.
And then we had something called the corporate punt, where other organizations and other divisions were punting to me work that was on their KPIs. And because I was afraid to say no and kick up any dust, I just said yes. And so I actually literally learned litigation that had nothing to do with my position. And so it really took me actually facing myself down for what I was and seeing, Jamal, you are falling apart because you are looking for something that other people cannot give you. It's really not their responsibility. It is your responsibility when you are burning the candle at ends that don't even exist, and you are living your life to please everyone else, to actually find out what is the root cause of why you're showing up this way. Because this didn't just happen overnight. And so I had to literally go back, you know, through my own counseling and tackle those narratives that were handed to me as a little boy and those seeds of rejection that had already been sown. And so my excellence, my quote unquote high performance, was just a trauma response of a fear of rejection. I did not want to be rejected. And so it's not that I didn't know how to say no, it's that I refused. Let's key in on that word. I refused to say no because I wanted to protect myself. And let's just be honest. Let's put your audience to sleep here for a second. Those were the neural pathways that were dug in my brain.
Yeah.
This is safety, man. You're not going to be safe if you say no. If you kick up any dust, if you give any indication that you're not on someone's team, that you're not a team player, what does that mean for you?
No, you're right. What I'm thinking about is that the majority of my listeners are women. Although I will say I'm very happy that Spotify tells me that 5% of my listeners are non-binary, and that makes me very proud. But, you know, most of my listeners are women, and there's this narrative currently in the burnout world that we're burning out more and that we are more prone to the perfectionism and the excellence and the people-pleasing and the codependence and all of that. And here you are saying, I did all of that. I did all of that. Do you think that you're alone in that as a man?
Oh, no. We all have our stories most of burnout. Some of us are just strong enough and willing to tell them, and then some of us lie about it. There are a lot of male empaths out there, you know, and I mean, obviously I work in counseling and coaching. So if you're not sensory and you don't really have good self-awareness and empathy, I wouldn't say you could leave this practice. So 70% of my clients are female. So I'm sure there is some correlation there. But yes, there's other dudes out there like this, depending on their background and their makeup. You know, and I found myself having to be the social barometer for the friend group, the community group, the family group. You know,
what do you mean when you say that?
That means if whatever mood Jamal is in, that's the mood we're all in. Like, so it's in a sense, and my clients who are wives and mothers, they'll understand this. It's like you have to be on at all times. It's like I can never get a moment where it's just, let me rage. Let me just not talk. Let me not fill space with what you want me to fill it with. Let me not be the voice of reason and the shoulder to lean on. So when I say social barometer, that's what I mean. It's just like everybody's looking to you as the one who, in a sense, the pillar that holds all things up. But if you think about it, let's speak about it from a trauma response.
Yeah.
It feeds something. You know, I did a post a long time ago. I don't even know where it is in cyberspace. So it's called The Narcissist Within. Because you hear so much about narcissism and it's all this finger point. And I'm like, you know, all of us have some narcissistic traits. Let's just be honest.
And some of them are healthy.
Yes. But that narcissist within, that need to be needed, that need to be dependent on, that need to be seen as the answer for all things, that was feeding in me something that was missing in my childhood. Like, oh, this feeds something good in me. That means I'm doing something right. So in the early days, before I, you know, really make the investment in my mental, spiritual, and physical wellness, I thought it was a good thing until I realized, like, dude, you're running on fumes here.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. I thought it was a good thing too. And I thought that not only, I talked about this recently in office hours, not only did I think it was a good thing, but I also believed that I would be rewarded if I did all of these things, and some sort of like Christian, Catholic, karmic energy, universal goodness would come back to me because I was so busy serving everyone all the time that at some point, somebody or something or some being or anything would notice me and fill me back up. And they didn't. It never happened. And I waited and waited and waited for it to fill me back up. And it did not fill me back up. And so what I had to, what I personally had to tangle with in that was that I was spending so much time making assessments and assumptions about other people's desires and needs and how, like you're saying, how they want me to fill the time, how they want me to show up. I was, they're all guesses. Most of the time I think I did pretty well, but I don't actually, like, we don't really know. We know that people were pleased with us, but is that what they really, truly, like, who knows? But I was making a lot of assumptions. I was making a lot of assessments always, but I was not ever in my own body saying, what might you need right now, Kate? So there was nothing for the energy or the universe to respond to within me because I was a shell.
I like to call that a phrase that I've coined, the folly of projection. We project what we feel like and we think others need and want. And based on that projection, well, let me then gather a persona to then meet said need.
That really I need met. And I'm thinking that if I meet your need in this way, you'll notice it and then you'll meet my need that way too. But that's not usually how life goes.
Which therein goes the misplaced expectation, followed by what? The resentment.
Exactly. And we're back to my favorite
nasty
topic.
Cycle.
And we're back to my favorite. I had this conversation. This happened. This came up recently. I want to talk to you about this. I was doing the resentment is your superpower talk. And somebody at the end was like, well, you know, I just feel like I do all these things for people and I help people out. And then they don't even remember to thank me. And I don't even get a thank you. And I just think that, like, it's just like morally correct for them to thank me. And there was a lot of like real strong self-righteousness, real strong moral superiority. And I recognized myself in it because I'm the girl that holds the door for you at Target. And if you don't say anything, I'm turning around with my accent going, "You're welcome." Right? I don't do that anymore, but I used to. I know I'm not the only one, so don't even lie, fried fam. And I said to her, "They don't actually owe you anything. They didn't ask you to give them anything. You decided to give them something and now you're holding it over them." She's like, "Yeah, but it's just polite." And kind of folded her arms. And I was like, can you pick that apart for me?
Wow. So, Fried Fam, I hope you guys are ready for this.
They are.
When, you know, even her folding her arms and that reaction, you began to touch on a nerve. And part of that nerve and that response, and even in a situation that I was recently in, when the brain only knows a certain way of functioning and that gets confronted and there's a pathway to disrupt, there's automatic, the walls will go up.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, her folding her arms was not I'm upset with Kate.
No, I didn't take it that way.
Yeah. I'm upset because I don't know another way of living. I don't know another way of functioning. This is all the brain and this is all my mind and my biology know. All I've been known and trained and taught is to give out. I've been programmed like this and I'm not ready to recode. It's so strange that the tricks that the brain will play on us. Even in the sense of like social media, I did a post about people being overly apologetic about not posting every day and not showing up. And, "Oh, I promise more content, but you know, I was with my sick mother." You know what? That's maybe nobody's business.
Yeah.
And now you're somehow promising more content. You have been programmed by the algorithm that if you're not there and not showing up, somehow you owe someone an apology. And someone actually disconnected from me as a result of that post. And a friend of mine who works in the psychosocial space said, "Yeah," she said, "your post touched something in them. They didn't like it. They don't mind being programmed." And so it's a part of us that actually have to face ourselves down, that we have been programmed and our mind and brain has been coded to function a certain way. And there is a narrow path to, okay, let's actually come up out of this rut, but it's painful. It's just like when you go in a gym for the first 3 weeks, it gets worse before it gets better. And some people are not willing to go there. And so her resistance to that, that expectation that we have and that desire to give and receive, because we've even been taught that, I'm a Christian, we've been taught that in faith-based spaces, if you give, you'll receive. Sometimes that's not always the case.
No.
And it actually puts you in the place of a false motive of
exactly. Life
is a genie in a bottle that I can just rub. And if I rub it like this, something's going to pop out. And this is going to be my return on the investment I've made. And so when we go in and disrupt those patterns of the brain and that gets confronted, we got to be saying, okay, I'm willing to go there. And some of us aren't willing to go there.
Let's break down the thank you a little bit more, because I think that what you're talking about now is exactly where I wanted to go, is this rubbing of the genie, like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get gratitude for it, and therefore it's going to be worth it. So I don't exist outside of this reciprocal relationship. And one of the things that the conversation continued after that, and we got to a good place with it, but one of the things that I said to her was, I really hold a strong belief that now, that if I fill myself up enough and give from my overflow, things do come back to me, but they don't always come back to me through the road that I gave them out on. So if you're only looking for relationships that are perfectly reciprocal, is that a word?
Reciprocal.
that was really, I was like, wait a second. If you're only looking for relationships that are reciprocal, you're going to miss out on some really great people in your life, because you're getting things from other spaces that you're not noticing, acknowledging, accepting, having gratitude for, because you're expecting it to come down road A, but it's coming from road Y. And you're like, well, I wasn't looking down road Y. So I want to talk about this, like, desire to do something the quote unquote right way and then be praised and or get gratitude the right way. Like, the thing she was most upset about was the thank you. You know, so what is, how do we break that? How do we help somebody break that down? Because I know there's people listening to, I'm making a bang up show over here. I know there are people that are listening that are like, well, yeah, those people should say thank you. But we have so much going on these days. She might have made a referral and connected people, and maybe they got hired like 2 years later and they don't even remember how the referral happened. Like, that happens all the time. So,
I think the way, and I'm going to try to make this very practical and not ethereal, is when we sit with ourselves. You know, there is a place for prayer. There's a place for meditation. There's a place for breath work that actually rewires the way you think and rewires your belief system. You know, we both know, and I mean, you studied for years, we both know the CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy. Most of us counselors and psychologists come from CBT. What we don't focus on is the belief that actually informs the behavior.
Right.
And when we take the time to pray, to meditate, to actually sit with ourselves, and to actually commit to consistent breath work, it actually rewires the way that we think, the way we believe, and also what we perceive. A lot of times when our brain is so clouded, we don't process intel the right way. So our expectations are mostly misplaced. Mm. And in that space where we're expecting a thank you from a certain person, we're actually expending energy
and waiting for it.
By waiting on that, instead of, okay, your thank you actually is going to come some years later from another source. I can't tell you the fact that, you know, when you've been doing this work for years, you work with clients years back, and next thing you know, you have a referral 5 years later of a person that actually is at this point paying a high ticket because they referred you to a CEO. And you're like, man, I worked with them when I was like a junior counselor. What the heck? It's happened.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to say thank you or whatever like that. Even if they did, they just said, oh, look, I know his work, or I know her work. And so even something as simple as that, I think we're wired. Almost hardwired. I don't want to say hardwired because that brings some finality to it, to expect something that's given out in the moment. You know, and we've heard the word before, but use a graphic word, fried fam, mental masturbation. It's like, I just want to get off right now. I want the instant gratification of you giving me what I've given out. And really, we can make jerks of ourselves. we don't even realize that we're being unreasonable. Because like you said, even in that space, like when somebody's walking by and holding the door, we don't know what's on that person's mind.
We do not.
And if you think about the professional space, because I know you have a lot of career women who are listening to this, and even some career men. A lot of times when I do consultation and I walk into a team, I think we think the moment, ladies, that you put on a pair of heels, guys, you put on a pair of loafers, somehow everything about you has changed when you come through that front door. You bring yourself, your family history, your psychology, your belief system, your addictions, all that stuff you bring with you. And sometimes you are just having a bad day. And I think we don't give space for the people in our lives and the people we see on a regular basis to have a bad day. And sometimes the people we don't know, that's reality.
Yeah.
And so when we have this error of misplaced expectation, then you begin to develop a narrative in your mind about that. Like, I gave that out and that person didn't give me anything back. It's like, maybe they didn't have it in them at that moment to give something back, but they remember, like, oh man, he or she held that door for me, or he or she just sent and texted a word of kindness, or they supported, you know, one of my business initiatives. And sometimes it comes back to you in spades. But if in the moment we let that narrative be the thing that defines that person, you can burn a bridge that would have been an open door to amazing opportunities.
Well, and I think another big piece of this is where did your giving come from? Mm-hmm. So when I am this week alone, I have recommended 5 other people for speaking gigs that I'm not available for dates, or it's a gig that I did a couple years ago that they, you know, they wrote to me and asked me for recommendations, or that 5 people I've recommended for gigs. And I'm doing that out of a place of overflow. So I'm not lacking anything now because I gave those things. And I think this is the question. Like, if you are not fueling yourself and filling yourself up and caring for yourself enough to be giving from overflow, When you give something, you are emptying a piece of yourself that now needs to be filled back in. So you are waiting for the gratitude or the recognition or the praise or the give back or the. But when you are fueling yourself enough and there is an overflow coming, these gigs are all overflow gigs for me. Whoever gets them, I'm like, good for you. If they say thank you, don't say thank you, like, is totally irrelevant to me. I just want them to get the gig because good for you on your progress. And because I don't need anything right now because I fill myself up.
Don't miss it, fried fam.
Right?
I mean, how many times do we hear in the spaces that we work in, don't pour from empty cup? Yeah. Yet there is this commitment to pour from an empty cup. This commitment to burn the candle at ends that don't even exist and to somehow think I'm the exception to the rule. No, you're not.
Yeah.
And this whole Instagram lifestyle of, hey, I can wake up at 3:30 and do yoga and, you know, drink my kombucha mixed with Shilajit and
shoot me with your morning routine. Like, honestly.
Exactly. We got to get past the fakeness of it all and get past, I mean, you and I are in the same space, so of course we're going to expose the BS. I'm right there with you. And I think that place of being filled up and giving from an overflow is something that most of us have not gotten yet because we're still actually looking for something.
Yeah.
And because we don't, I mean, when you're not even committed to your own affirmations and your own belief in like who you are, you will function from a place of lack. So even when there's overflow coming, and I'm sure this will resonate with your audience, you will sabotage that overflow because you don't deem yourself worthy.
Ouch. Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, you're upset when somebody doesn't fill you back up with their thank you. Even if I'm not saying that it isn't thank you to say polite when people, it isn't polite to say thank you when people do things for you. Yeah, of course it is. But like you said, like maybe that person you just opened the door for to Target is running in there to buy a pillow so they can sleep in their child's hospital room who just had a last minute surgery. And they're not thinking. They don't even know what day it is. The door was just magically open. They didn't even see it. Like, you don't know what's going on with people. Maybe they're an asshole. Then you don't want their thank you anyway, because like that, what good is that energy in your world? Like, it's possible that they're just an asshole. But for the most part, I think that not everybody has the same rules as you as what requires gratitude and what, you know. Somebody else mentioned something recently that there was no like thank you in an email for something that was done. I often don't write thank you in email form because I don't want thank you in email form if that's the only thing you're writing, because it fills up my inbox. So I don't do it to other people because I'm like, it's just another, like, I get 700 mails a day anyway. Like, I don't need that. That's not useful to me. So people might have just a different way of going about their lives that is just as good as yours, just a different set of rules. And that's okay. But we're going to move on. Because there was something that you said the last time we talked. And I told you I wasn't going to force us to go here today, but I kind of am. You talked about sort of like a false sense of being an introvert and being codependent and those things smashing together. Let's start with the introvert part.
Okay, let's go there. Again, because of the spaces that you and I work in, and we are here in a post-COVID world, and we remember 2020, 2021, when everything that moved turned into a coach. And in our space, in the mental health or the wellness space, I see so much content about introverts this, introverts that, and then you see the ream of comments. Especially when it's some people that you actually know personally. And I had to wonder and think about my own story, my own background. Are you an introvert? Are you just into hurt? Do you have hurt and pain that has not been processed, that is causing you to turtle your way through life to play it safe? you know, actual introversion. There are people who are actually introverts, but you have a lot of people who are extroverts masquerading as an introvert because they have to protect themselves from pain that has not been processed. And if I can somehow function in a way where even when I step into a meeting, I'm the silent one, I'm the one who doesn't kick up dust, I'm the one who always says yes, I'm the one that will play the low. And even the way you choose a mate, this is my way of this. The brain has already dug the neural pathways that it says, this is how you protect yourself. So this is now my narrative. You never really were an introvert. I mean, you can come into a gathering and talk up the whole room, but somehow in your childhood or teenage years, you built that association with rejection, whether it was mental, whether it was psychological, whether it was physical. And if it was physical, it definitely has an impact on the way that you're functioning now. And so you become dependent. I don't want to jump too far ahead on a persona that you have put out there. And inwardly, you're miserable. You're miserable as a worker, as a professional, as an entrepreneur, any space you get in, because you have literally put forth your representative to everyone. And you even claim something that you're not, because it sounds good to say, oh, I'm introverted. You know, it's like, no, there's a lot of pain there. There's trauma there. There are stockpiled instances that have happened throughout the course of your life that you didn't take the time to address because it was so painful to even think about it, to even go there. And how many people do we have in our field, in our purview, that are claiming something, that are self-diagnosing? And think about the world of opportunity that's open to them if they actually were themselves and not their representative. But they put forth this thing. They've even gone through training for introverts. It's like, you've wasted your time and your money. That's not even what you are.
How do you know whether your introversion is nature or nurture? Because there are people that are just introverts, yeah, right?
There are people who are actually just introverts.
Yeah.
You know, and let's say professionally, you find this type where I call them like the SMEs. They're the subject matter experts that can take like that corner cubicle. They're literally the nicest person in the world, but they don't have to speak or say anything to anyone. You just give them the work. They do it. They're good. And that's kind of just a natural way. They run out of energy extremely quick, not in a group, just even with like two people. They're like, you can almost see their palms sweating and almost, you know, we talked about biology last time we talked, just the energy. You can feel that field of like, I'm really not that pressed to connect. I wanted to say hi and then I'm done.
Yeah.
Versus a person who has been nurtured that way, where it has been informed through their own trauma. The nerves actually come from them playing back what it was like being childhood or teenage said person and says, wait a minute, I'm in an unsafe place. I've been here before. Let me then turn it on and pull back. Let me then, you know, they'll get in a group, man, and they can just, they're all over the place. But as soon as they feel unsafe, then they pull away. You see it professionally, you see it personally, you see it in groups, you see it in family dynamics, because they associate said person, even if you look like a certain person or sound or if you're resonant a certain way, the brain will then track back to those moments and say, I do not feel safe right now.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. So my father is an interesting example of this. He's the mayor of everywhere he's ever been. Like, we were in Portugal for like 4 minutes and he already knew the guy that owned the closest coffee shop. The guy had agreed to go in for him earlier the next morning, so my dad could have his coffee earlier than the guy opened. Like, just, he knows everybody everywhere. But when we're at a family party, he's in a corner by himself. But he's got four sisters and four brothers. There's nine of them. He was the eighth out of nine children. His father was extremely strict and his mother was fucking exhausted. So it was like, you're not going to get attention here. And if you're not perfect, you're going to get screamed at because we do not have time, energy, space, like any of it. So when he's with family, he's on the back deck smoking a cigarette. But when he's walking down the street or at the golf course, or he's Mr. Mayor.
Family is associated with rejection. Mm. Family is associated with pain. Family is associated with, you know what? I don't want to repeat that.
Yeah.
and perfect strangers are associated with, okay, I've never met a stranger. Now I can actually express, I can actually be the me that I want to be around them because I don't have an association with that. The brain hasn't made that correlation. I've done this work with clients. It's just amazing. They're like, oh gosh, that's me. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is an interesting thing during burnout, because when you're burnt out and your prefrontal cortex is shrinking or shrunk, and which interferes with your ability to understand other people, feel connected to other people, feel empathy, and like read mirror neurons and, you know, all of it, you do feel lonelier. And you do get exhausted by being with people more than you probably did in the past. Like, I was shocked during my burnout because I am a natural extrovert. I like to talk to people. And when I was burnt out, I was like, F all y'all. Like, do not ask me to lunch. Do not call me. Why are you texting me? What do you want? Like, I can't handle any of you people. And that's it. Some people, when they go through the burnout process, they're like, oh, I was acting as an extrovert, but I'm really introverted. And I'm like, but are you? Or were those relationships, I'm not saying that everything has to be reciprocal, but were those relationships, did you enter every relationship that you had, like raising hand emoji, folks, did you enter every relationship that you had as the helper, as the server, as the chameleon, as the giver, so that even when people tried to give to you or fuel you, you didn't take it. And then you got tired in relationships because you weren't getting anything out of them because you refused to get anything out of them.
Mic drop. I'm going to invite Thor into the chat to come pick up that heaviness. Because he's the only one strong enough to pick up that mic. Don't miss it, folks.
Right. So how does this slide into codependence?
Oh, I love that question. Let's go for it. Whenever we have developed, and we've been talking about like this persona of, oh, I'm actually an introvert. Or our brain has already made that correlation of what is safe and what is not safe based on the associations and the narratives that have been handed to us and that we've also capitalized on. Because again, I love what you said in the podcast when you came on Listen and Speak, we don't shame anyone for coping mechanisms because no. The brain only knows what it knows.
Yeah.
When there is, and I'm sure your audience has heard of emotional enmeshment.
No, break it down for them because it's not something we talk about a lot.
Well, if you're in any of the codependent space, you're going to hear that word a lot. And that is when your survival is based on the emotional connection and energy you receive from what you give out with another person or another party. And when you become enmeshed, you almost feel like you cannot survive without it.
Isn't it also like, I can't be satisfied in my life if the people around me that I'm codependent with are not satisfied? Like, I can, you know, only be as happy as my partner or my child or my whatever. Like, I can't have my own experience of the world because my emotions are tied to everyone else's.
Yes. And you especially see that, you know, unfortunately, with women, especially in the family, it's like, my happiness depends on, am I getting them to soccer on time? Is he happy?
You know, are they mad at me?
Yes.
Whatever.
And even in the faith-based space, somebody was like, Jamal, you probably have so many clients because in the faith-based space, even marital counseling is geared towards the man. It is very patriarchal.
Yeah.
And so there is this, in a sense, assumed I have to cater to everyone around me. And it almost begins, like we were talking about feeling, it does feel something. It's meeting a need that in childhood and in teenage years was not met.
For instance, what kind of need?
That need to be needed, that need to be wanted, that need to be affirmed, that need simply to be liked, that need just to know you're okay. You know, when we've had traumatic childhoods, or we've gone through any type of abuse or neglect, the body and the brain and the mind just want to know, am I okay? Can I take up space here? It's those simple things, those qualitative things that we tend to typically overlook in our hyper-quantitative corporate world. That are huge. And so drawing the correlation with codependency and how we even define personality or personality type or the manifestation of that, when we become codependent on others around us, whether it's our family or whether it's our, there's even manager to direct report relationships that are very codependent. They're community relationships, especially in faith-based spaces, that are very codependent. We will then put on a persona and our representative, that is our character that we wear that keeps that intact. And all the time when it's meeting said need, it's also draining us. And then when we get to the place where our eyes are open for 5 seconds, therein is the resentment. It's like, what have I been doing all these years? I've become so dependent on this persona, this person that I push forward to protect me because I don't want to feel unsafe. And I've put forward, you know, this false persona, this false self, because I've been running from them since I was a little boy or a little girl.
Well, because I don't even know who the real persona is.
Exactly.
I don't even know who that is. And then, but then how do you figure that out? Like, how do you get to this is who I am and I have needs and I can meet them? Like, I don't believe that we're supposed to meet all of our own needs. I do believe we need relationship for some things. And, but how do we, it's something we talk about a lot here. If we've spent, say, 38 years existing for other people's convenience, really, how do we begin to even know how to actually fuel those needs that we've been trying to fuel unsuccessfully with these behaviors for so long?
That was a great question. First, you take inventory. That's a tough part to do. And I'm sure you do this in your work, like that energy inventory. It's like, where are my percentages in the negative? You know, where are they in the positive? And then where am I unwilling to take risk? Because that very thing that you're afraid to do, because the fear of rejection is really one of the root causes that is fueling this whole tree and this whole branch of crap that has been growing out of your life all these years. Where are you most unwilling to take the risk? And it could be professionally, it could be personally. And that's when you actually dip both feet in and say, you know what? I'm diving in with both feet, win, lose, or draw. Now, you don't do this alone. This is why you have counselors and coaches like myself and yourself to navigate and live in that space with you. And to actually take you back to what is the why have I been showing up this way? What are all the things I need to unlearn? And then what do I learn going forward? But always look at what you're most unwilling to take the risk on. Because that
you have an example.
Yeah. You want me to give a professional or personal example?
Whatever came up.
I love it. I would say this. Oh, this is a good one. I'll give an example from my past. And so we had went through a split on a job that I was working at. So half the staff had left and I became one of three senior counselors. And so obviously that increased my caseload. And then I also had a remote program to manage. That means I was managing 18 counselors who were working remotely, their caseloads. And then they also wanted me going up to a prison every Friday in Indiana. This is from Northern Kentucky. So we both know that is a 2.5 hour drive one way. 5 hours, that's just driving. Not to mention the 2 hours we spent in the prison with the inmates. I didn't mind that. It began to wear me out because it's like, okay, we're down half staff. I'm managing my own caseload, which is increased. And I'm also managing a remote program. And so the person I was going up there with was a board member. We don't piss them off. They're the board because they also are the donors of high net worth and they're networked with all these powerful people. And I said, okay. I felt like, okay, I could potentially lose my job if I say something, but I was really wearing out. I was burning a candle at ends that didn't exist. I had a full caseload, not to mention I was juggling like 5 different things. And I remember saying to myself, I need to talk to the CEO. And I said, this is the thing I'm most unwilling to do because they were close. They were really close friends. And I said, you know what? He doesn't sign my paycheck, said board member. You do. I can no longer do this. And if you're going to keep me here, you're going to have to take me off of those Friday runs to Indiana. I cannot be present with the caseload I have and the new caseload that I'm managing. And so we've already had very high turnover. If you don't want even more turnover and resignation, I'm going to need you to fix this. And I'm going to be honest, he fixed it right away. Now, this is where it didn't have the craziest happy ending. So said person who was always like the board member, Jamal, you're the greatest, didn't speak to me for a year. And that's when I found out I grew in my boldness, because it's like I realized that people loved me or were really happy with me when they can control me. And when they couldn't control me and I was willing to stand in my power and actually establish, because your boundaries are for you. They're not for other people. People respect your boundaries when you do. Don't miss that. So, and once I took that risk, it's like, you know what? I don't need anything from you. I don't need you to speak to me. I don't need you to like me. I need to be at the place where I'm healthy to do what I loved, because I started noticing I wasn't loving what I was doing for the space of like 4 months, because I was doing something that they wanted me to do. And I said, I got to put a stop to this. So that is my very practical example to your audience. Where you're fearful of taking the risk, there's reward on the other side of it, but it may not come out the way you envision. There will be people who may not like you, who may not speak to you. Guess what? Count it a blessed subtraction.
A blessed subtraction. I like that. And I think this is something that we talk about a lot. And this is, you know, you said the energy assessment. This is something that Sarah does in the group program and in Unfried. When I'm working with people one-on-one, this is what I use the resentment journal for. Let's figure out all the places that you are holding on to shit that is really twisting your nuts. And where we want to go. And sometimes I don't make people do the biggest thing first. Sometimes if some of the big things are too big, let's do all the little things first. Let's take care of all these mini things so that we can open up some energy back, because I don't need you to be annoyed of because your slip cover is crooked on your couch. Like, let's fix that. Let's deal with that bullshit so we can actually go handle this other stuff, because we have enough energy for it, because we're not being drained by the pan that sticks to our eggs in the morning and the knife that isn't sharp enough for our tomatoes. Like, let's fix that. Let's do the bullshit. Let's do the quote unquote small stuff so that we have the space to deal with the rest of this and then tackle it. But at some point, you are likely going to have to face something and say something that is uncomfortable, and it might not go well. You could have lost your job. You could have said, well, we can't do that. I can't help you. And you would have had to then make a decision about whether or not you were going to put up with that. And I think this is a huge problem that we are so afraid of job stability, which is like doesn't even exist anyway. It's like a total falsification. We're so afraid of it that we don't make bold moves at all. And then we get to the point where we've accepted so much that even if we said no to three things, our piles would still be too high. And we see everybody else around us doing the same thing. So we're all in this accepting of the problem together. And this is why when I say I'm here, like my mission is to end burnout culture by having one person at a time stop participating in it. You know, the more people that stop participating in it, the easier it becomes for all of us to not play this stupid game. And does that mean you're never going to have to do extra? No, even in my own business, I have some weeks that are a little wilder than others. Like, that's just life. But it's not a wild week every week for months on end, with no end in sight and no promise of support and false promises of support that I've already heard 87 times and nothing's ever happened. Like, at some point you may have to have that bold conversation that says, dude, WTF, this is not sustainable for anybody. It's not me. It's not like if this is not due as a human, I can't see 40 patients and handle 18 people's caseloads as a supervisor and be driving, spending 8 hours on the road between being there and the ride every week. Like, that's doesn't fit in the hours.
And talk about being overworked and underpaid.
Oh, good Lord.
This was seasons ago, but it's like the funny thing about whether it's corporate, whether it's nonprofit, even though I'm not in your finance department, I know you have budget for it. Budget for it and make it happen.
Yeah.
And when you talk about ending burnout culture, the funny thing is that a lot of these CEOs, you have budget to actually mitigate this issue. And the funny thing is I love going, you know, one of the cases I make when I do corporate consultation is like, it's 12 to 24K. And that's on the low end. Every time you turn over a new employee and onboard a new one.
Minimally.
Training, that's minimally. That's on the low end.
That's if they're making 50 grand a year.
Boom. So think about how much money on your bottom line is walking out the door due to high turnover, because you will not do a thing to change your work culture. Think about how many employees are disengaged. Oh, let's send our employee engagement survey. They're disengaged because you're not hearing them.
They're not even, they're people are so tired of even filling those out because they feel like they're not doing anything.
Thank you for collecting the data to do nothing with it.
Thank you for wasting my time and giving me another task of something to fill out that is not going to get us anywhere anyway. And here we are knocking on people's doors being like, let us in, we'll fix it. Jamal, how do we make them listen to us?
You know what? There's a scripture from an ancient writer that says, he who has an ear, let him hear. And sometimes when I do a social media post, I end with that because I know there's those who are going to hear. But I know everyone is not going to hear.
Yeah.
Because let's go back to where we started at. Systemic change starts from within, and it can be very daunting. So I'm even endeared towards the quote unquote toxic CEO. He may not know any better.
He doesn't know any better. This is what I keep trying to tell people. I'm not mad at the leaders and the CEOs. They are repeating shit that they've been repeating for 50 years that worked for 50 years on some level. And now they're being told that everything's broken. And they're like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? This is what? And they don't know how to do it different. And they also carry in, I have a podcast episode, a Straight from Kate episode titled, The Workplace is a Trauma Recycling Center.
I love it.
Because it is. But it's not just you who burnt out with your trauma. It's your coworker's trauma. It's your boss's trauma. It's the CEO's trauma. Like, everybody's carrying their own bag of shit in there. And it's all being thrown into a middle in a big pile. And we're all like, ooh, let's walk around that. I really have this very strong desire to spend a lot more time with leaders unwinding their burnout patterns so that it can trickle down. Like, I just want to put them in a room and pick it apart.
Hey, we didn't even talk about perfectionism.
Oh my goodness. We have 6 minutes. Can you do it in 6 minutes?
I can try to.
can you perfect perfectionism in 6 minutes?
Oh, dear Lord. You know, perfectionism and burnout are kissing cousins. We both know it.
Yeah.
And if you think about it from a leadership standpoint, I was working with a client that I offboarded a month ago. It was incredible. And we had to dig into her fear of delegation.
Mm.
And the scarcity mindset that came with that. And what came out in her childhood was she had an extremely abusive father and non-emotionally available mother.
Yeah.
And was the oldest. Try to make that work. And so it's like, your thing is everything has to be perfect. Everything around the house has to be perfect. Everything outside of the house has to be perfect. Because when daddy gets home and it's not. So coming on a job as a manager, taking on things that are not your responsibility, or as a CEO, because if I delegate and something's not right, there is rejection on the other side of that. And so a lot of times with perfectionism and burnout, you take on more and you refuse to delegate, to hand off, to actually allow another person to come into their own because of your own fears. It's that fear of rejection that keeps the toxic cycle intact, and that fear of delegating. Even when someone steps to you and says, hey, I want to help you with this. I just, you know, I got some extra hours and what, you will literally shun them and say, no, like, I got it. And you don't have it. And also the fear of putting people on your team that are smarter than you that can do said job better than you, because it will make you look incompetent. Now, let's not even talk about the cultural ramifications of that. If you're a person of color or a woman, who it's more pressure on you to feel competent. So in the time we have left, I can't really break this down like I want to, but you can see on the look, you can see on my face, like I'm just, because this is the work I do all the time.
Yeah. And this sort of holding on to all of the strings, because you do have some responsibility for them, and not allowing other people to grow and learn and develop underneath you means you're not a leader at all. You're just getting paid like one, but you're not a leader.
She said what she said.
And that's hard to swallow. That's hard to swallow. But I think a lot of people that end up in leadership positions do have these drives of perfectionism and overachievement and excellence, and those are their common traits. And that's the bullshit piece of it, right? Those are the things that got you into that place, because it got you recognized because you did all the things right for such a long time. But you never learned how to manage your own energy, which means you can't manage anybody else's energy. So you become a person that's higher up on the ladder. That's, I think the job of a leader is really only about people.
That's it.
It's not about tasks. Like, if you're a leader and you're doing tasks, you're not doing your job. Your job is the people.
That's it. And that's in the work I do, like on the executive coaching side, is like, we take the NT off management.
Manage me.
Let's manage ourselves first.
Ooh, I like it. Can I steal that?
As long
Borrow?
As you give me.
Of course, paid. Obviously.
Just say my name in those.
I will,
those
of course. Visits. Obviously.
Come on, Marshall.
Yeah, that's incredibly smart. Start here.
That's it.
Well, folks, we are 2 minutes to the top of the hour. A lot happened here today. So if it is necessary for you to shelf this episode for a couple of days and then come back to it, please put it in your schedule to do so. If you need to take us on a walk in a couple of days and listen to this again to unwind some things that you heard, please do that, because there's a lot to pick apart here. And the things that we're picking apart here are the real true essence of what burnout recovery requires. It's the safety. It's the being in your own skin. It's the absence of the projection of your mask, it's the understanding why you're behaving in certain ways. It's the acknowledging the things that you are really feel unwilling to address. This is burnout recovery. You're welcome. So, Jamal, if there are people out there that are in companies or there are individuals that are like, I need some Jamal in my life, how do they find you?
Well, two of the easiest ways to find me is mindsetmastermethod.com. That goes straight to the sales funnel. That'll keep stuff really simple because it's all on one page. You can go to my website, listenthenspeak.com. Duh. And third, there are different booking links for my top mate, because some people may want mentoring. Some people may want the whole 12 weeks. And I'm the only Jamal Marshall, J-A-H-M-A-A-L, Marshall with two L's on there. I'm super easy to find. Reach out to me on LinkedIn.
What was the first one that you said? Because I don't have that one on my list.
Mindsetmastermethod.com.
Well, you should have written that in your application form, sir. And Fried Fam, all of those things will, of course, as per usual, be in your show notes. So don't miss them. Jamal, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me. I adore you. And I'm just so thrilled that we are connected. Thank you for being you.
This sentiment is mutual, my friend. Kristen, we love you. Thank you for setting this up. Shout out.
She'll love that. All right, Fried Fam, we're wrapping up. If you love this episode, please share it with a friend, whoever has been on your mind the whole time as you're listening to it. every single person that we reach that makes a decision to choose themselves, to heal themselves, to end burnout culture internally, we are one person closer to our goal. All right. See you next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.